the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 179 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available, as always, on iTunes and at NFL.com/Sheck. S-H-E-K, Sheck, Sheck, Sheck. Still no crowd sound cheering it with me, huh, Black Tie? Huh. Busy schedule you have there, I guess. Too busy watching all the NFL preseason action, I gather. All right, let's talk about that first week of preseason. Let's look ahead to not just preseason week two, but to the NFL season proper. It's just about here, Rank. We're counting down the days. There he is, seated to my immediate right from NFL.com. You can catch him now 5 days a week, Kibitzing about fantasy football at NFL.com. It's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me. Milestone week for me.
Why so?
My Twitter followers, the Rank Amateurs, reached 20,000.
Oh, mazel tov. Very nice. 20K.
Thank you. Yeah,
that's a big number. That's like that seems to me like 20,000 in sports terms. That's a big number to hit if you're an NBA scorer,
that's
right?
Exactly.
Isn't that a career number?
Of.
Is that about, what would Kareem finish with there, Black Tie behind the glass?
He was in the 40s.
He was?
Didn't he get like 39,000?
Oh, I didn't realize. That's quite a bit.
But I think for other people, I think like 20,000, that's huge.
All right, good show lined up for you. I'm excited about this. We're going to be talking to none other than the Titans QB in just a minute here when he calls in. Rank, it's Jake Locker. It's a big season for him. Year three. I've been touting him. I thought coming out of school, he had a chance to be really good because you could see it coming. They said that he has the ability to run. He has a big arm, big pedigree as a kid. Stuck at Washington, had an up and down turn there, but you might say that that had more to do with the skill or lack thereof around him there. Now it's already gotten to be year three. Remember, he came into the league with Cam Newton. I said about a year ago that he had a chance to basically replicate what Cam Newton had done in the rookie season in his sophomore year. But again, injuries brought him down. Mm-hmm. I feel like they share a lot of the same characteristics, Locker and Cam Newton, that is. Both have big arms. Both have, on the downside, both their questions about their accuracy. Both can run, and they're not just fleet of foot. They're fast guys, but they're also big guys. They're burly runners, sort of like a Tebow, if you will, or a young Ben Roethlisberger. Not that Ben Roethlisberger was ever a running QB, but a guy who could take a shot and, you know, from a traditional QB standpoint, shake off would-be sackers and extend the play and make a play that way. So anyway, it's a big year for him, or so all the experts say. We keep hearing that this is a make-or-break year for Locker. It's funny. Well, like we've talked about before, for better or worse, there is parity in this here NFL, and there really are only one or two or four teams, probably tops, that you can say absolutely positively they have no chance of making the playoffs. You hear the Titans probably have as big a range of opinions that we've heard out there, huh?
That's very true. And then it's funny, you're talking about Jake Locker. I haven't really followed his career since he spurned the Angels. NFL, because he was drafted by them.
Sure. I didn't know that he was drafted by the Halos, but it's interesting that so you just tuned out.
I bet he regrets it. I'll have to ask him.
Why don't you bring that up to him? Yes,
I
please
will.
Do. Please
don't
do.
Don't challenge me.
I don't. Listen, I'm going to ask him uncomfortable questions like what I was just talking about. It's not all, you know, it's not all rainbows and sunshine or whatever the phrase is for that. I'll confront him. You know what, Black Tie? Get the sound ready. I'm going to ask him an uncomfortable question. That's something we like to do from time to time. I'll ask it. There you go. So what? So what? I'll ask it. LaDainian Tomlinson sat here in Studio 66 a matter of days ago. What did I say to him? He's a colleague. Was I afraid? No. I said to him, what happened in that playoff game, that AFC title game that you didn't play in? What gives? What gives with that? He answered me. It was a frank discussion. We can do hard-hitting stuff here, Rank. We do it, and I have done it, and we both will do it today with Jake Locker and beyond as we get into the preseason. Speaking of which, week two fast approaching now. A good slate of games for you. I always say the analogy I make, or the metaphor, I'm not sure which it is it's, you know, the preseason in football is a Civil War reenactment. It looks the same as real football, but there's something off, and you can't divine whether it's reality or if it's all just an illusion. Everybody, as you, I mean, this happens perennially. It's August, these games are played, and everybody looks at them, and then they start determining, this means that for this team. And I want to talk about all those things in just a minute here. In the meantime, I want you to go to NFL.com/Schek, S-H-E-K. There you will find a link for NFL Preseason Live. You can see all of these preseason games for $19.99, mm-hmm. 1 cent off. It's not even $20.
Whoa.
It's $19.99, you understand. And you can see all the games. You can watch them live on your laptop or on your iPad device. And you can also see them if you don't want to sit and watch the game live. You can see it all in condensed 30-minute versions. Every game, like you pointed out last week, Rank, it's great for fantasy players to sort of right. get a read on what's going down on position battles and so on.
Quick note as well, it's NFL Preseason Live if you're in the States, but NFL Game Pass if you're international.
Yeah, and it's I'm glad you brought that up, Black Tie, because it because, of course, the Czech Republic knows no borders. You know, people listen in the U.S. They live outside the U.S. Football America, nay, Football Planet. That's what we're talking about here. So we've got some games, and Locker's playing Andy Dalton. I feel like I'm going to keep saying it, and I'm going to hold off on some good news on the Titans here in just a minute, but I do think the Bengals are going to win the division there. Although I get spooked as these things start to accelerate that more and more experts are yeah. picking the Bengals. I don't like it so much. I think that that is legitimately a psychological disadvantage to a team like the Bengals that hasn't done much at all. I mean, they've made the playoffs two straight years, but they haven't won a game. This is what they don't need. They don't need to be hearing about how good they are right now. They're not a mature enough team in terms of collective success that they need to have their heads filled with, hey, everybody loves us. We can't miss this year.
Yeah, I really wish they didn't have the circus atmosphere that comes along with Hard Knocks. I wish they were more down to business, so to speak.
I think that was a mistake, yeah.
And, you know, yeah, they're poised for a huge year, but this could have been a huge distraction. But James Harrison is trying to keep them in check. I hope that he does.
He is. The thing is, and Hard Knocks week two going down, we're coming at you on Tuesday afternoon, so we have not seen the second episode yet. But, boy, it's captivating stuff. I just don't think it was a good idea for the team to enter into this because it's a reality show, obviously, and it creates some sideshow troubles. James Harrison doesn't like him. Practically, I think James Harrison, I don't like seeing him in a Bengals uniform as somebody who roots for the Steelers. It's unpleasant to look at that. Right. But I don't think I could see him doing big things in a 3-4, but that's a tough spot to throw him into. In a 4-3, that's not an ideal fit for him, but he didn't have a ton of options. The other thing that was great about last week's was Pac-Man Jones running out of gas on his way to the first day of practice. That's excellent, you know?
Of course.
Often in life, people, you look around and you say, I'm one of these people. I like to blame everybody else for what goes down. You know, but really, ultimately, who's to blame? Pac-Man Jones. Pac-Man Jones, I'm sure, has a million reasons why things are wrong. It's because of that guy brought me down, or that woman brought me down, or so on and so forth. Pac-Man Jones, you know who maybe is the problem here? Pac-Man Jones. Yes. I also liked looking at Andy Dalton, by the way, doing Pilates. Really might have to give that a try. I've not seen an NFL player do it. People have suggested to me.
Didn't Kurt Warner do it?
Oh, did he? That's this 21st century newfangled business. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I thought all football players eschewed that sort of stuff in favor of just getting into the gym with the iron. But no, there was Andy Dalton doing the Pilates, all the stretch. It looked like it. I mean, I guess that's what it does. It does your core, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll try
it. It's the rage.
But you have to. I didn't know you really. I thought that was a joke when people say you get hooked up to machines and stuff. But it really is like a big contraption. It looks like a torture device, yes. And you're just all these strings and everything. Make you look like a marionette kind. Yeah, right. String.
Yeah, like that kind of.
But people have said to me, you should give it a shot because I take that as a shot because mm-hmm. I have a pot belly. But anyway, enough about me. So be it. I have a pot belly. I'm like the guy who just won the PGA Championship, Duffner.
Duffner.
Yeah, terrific.
Yeah, I saw you on the Fantasy Live on Monday.
Yeah, I was on there. Yeah,
because it was your jacket looked a little tight.
I don't care for that. I need your commentary and critiques.
Well, I thought you were wearing my jacket. I'm like, no. You want the bigger one.
All right. So this week in week two, games you can look at. The aforementioned Cam Newton going up against the Eagles. Nick Foles is getting the start. What? Let's start there before until Jake Locker calls in.
Okay.
Rank, what do you think about what happened? We saw Mike Vick have a nice showing there. DeSean Jackson with a long touchdown pass. What do you think it ends up being there, Vick or Foles?
It's going to be Michael Vick. I like what Chip Kelly's doing. He's not coming. Everybody just kind of assumed that Michael Vick was going to be the perfect fit for Chip Kelly's offense, that he was automatic. Chip Kelly has pretty much stopped all that talk, made sure that Michael Vick has gone out and earned the job. I feel that he has. Nick Foles is going to get his chance to prove himself in either event, and I know I will always start to default to fantasy talk here because of the aforementioned NFL Fantasy Live, but QB Eagles is very intriguing to me this year. I want to see what Chip Kelly is bringing to the NFL. I'm buying. I'm all in.
Wow.
You talk about buying into a system, I have already bought in.
It's interesting. I'll tell you, I asked you a trick question when I said Vick or Foles. The correct answer is C, both of the above. That's what's going to happen. Here's one of Damashek's bold predictions.
Okay.
And Black Tie, I want to make this a proper segment. I'm not ready to do it yet. But before the start of the season, Rank, you get prepared. Tell everybody else who comes into Studio 66, Black Tie, to be also prepared for this. I want bold predictions that are actually bold. I'm tired of people calling stuff bold. It's like elite QB. Like, I don't know, elite or is he not? Whatever. Who cares? It's a made. People decided to apply that adjective and who's in this club and who's out as though there's any actual value in being considered this. You don't get paid. Well, I guess you do get paid a lot, but there isn't some group that is issued by the press at the end of every season. Oh, yes, this is the elite group for 2013 or whatever.
Right.
Same thing. I want everybody to make bold predictions that are actually bold, not ones that are just have that word attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chip Kelly is going to go very collegiate here, and he's going to rotate those QBs. And I don't mean week to week. I mean quarter to quarter, maybe even series to series. If Vic throws a bad pick in one series, I bet you you'll see Foles run out there. It's a very un-NFL thing to do.
Well,
teams have tried it in the past, and it hasn't really worked very well. But you know what? All bets are off now in the 21st century. Things that didn't used to work, I think now do work. I think he'll give that a try.
Wasn't it Ken Wisenhunt who used Kurt Warner in the two-minute drill, and he would bench Matt Leinart, which then opened the door?
Is that the way it went?
Yeah, and then Warner eventually took over because Leinart got hurt, but that's what he would, because Leinart was a better two-minute quarterback, which to me, when you look at that, you're like, well, then why don't you just run the two-minute offense the whole time with Kurt Warner?
Well, yeah, I mean, but I do think you watch the Eagles are gonna get into some of that stuff this year. You also have the Vikes and the Bills after EJ Manuel. We'll talk about all this. Like I say, Titans and Bengals, Steelers and Redskins on Monday night. Point is NFL preseason live, or if you're abroad, NFL Game Pass. Go to NFL.com/Shek. Go through my page there because this gives us credit. And this is good for us, obviously, in the eyes of Kamish Goodell, because he's always watching. And so I like to look good in his eyes. Speaking of which, be a dear. While you're on the online, may as well go to the iTunes page, rate it, comment on it, download it, all that jazz. We appreciate it. All right, we have him on the line there, Black Tie?
We got him, Jake Locker, people.
Awesome. All right, we'll get back to talking about some of these preseason battles and what they mean and trying to divine what is the reality going into the regular season. And what is just an illusion that too many people are buying into? We'll get back to that in 1 second. Let's get the locker.
You listen to Dave Damashek.
All right, Rank. This is fun. I'm looking forward to yapping with this character because, as you know, I've been touting him for quite some time now. I say season 3 is the year that he has the big breakout. It is the Tennessee Titans QB, Jake Locker. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure thing. And I just want to start off, and this is not an attempt to ingratiate myself with you at the top of our conversation here, but I have good news for you. Are you ready, Jake Locker?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. I've decided you guys are going to make the playoffs this year.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, congratulations, man. How's it feel?
Oh, that's great, man. That's really exciting. I didn't expect it. That's nice.
All right. Well, listen, Jake, it's a big year in 2013 for the Tennessee Titans. A lot of people are, it feels like the Titans, as much as any team out of the 32 in the NFL, have the biggest range of expert opinions. Some people, come on, they're not going to the playoffs. Other people feel like I do that that there's a chance for you guys to be sneaky good this year. And the big part of that would be, if we look back to 2012, was Chris Johnson saying the offensive line needed repairs, it needed to be upgraded, so on and so forth. Take us back to when that was going on last season. Were you quietly like, hey, Chris, come on, we don't put down our teammates, but keep talking about that stuff, because, yeah, it would be great if we had some better linemen here?
No. I mean, it's everybody's going out and doing everything they can to help the football team win every week. And, I've always felt that if you got guys that care about it and go out and play hard for you, I'm willing to line up next to guys like that all day.
So you're a Washington State guy. I mean, obviously you're a Washington Husky, but you're from Washington State. And now you're living across the country in Tennessee, in Nashville. I hear nothing but great things about the town. You enjoying it out there?
Yeah, I really enjoy it, man. Everything you've heard is true. Really good people. There's a lot of stuff going on here. It's entertaining. It's enjoyable. We've really enjoyed living here.
Who does better with the ladies, pro football players or country musicians?
I don't know. I've been married since I got here, so I haven't tested out those waters.
No, I'm not asking you to test them out. Just your evaluation so far.
Well, I'd probably say country music. everybody loves country music artists here, so they're definitely more popular.
And are you more of a country music guy, or do you stick to your roots and embrace the Seattle sound?
No, I'm very much. I grew up listening to country music, so I grew up about an hour and a half north of Seattle, so it was a little different culture and lifestyle than Seattle.
How is that possible? There are so many great bands that came out of there in the '90s. Not one of them struck your fancy?
No, I've listened to country music my whole life.
Oh, for goodness gracious. Now, speaking of other decisions you've made in your life, I think you've done pretty well with this whole football thing, but let's get down to brass tacks. I'm an Angels fan. Do you still, at any point, do you think about, I could be playing in the outfield outside the greatest baseball player in the league right now, Mike Trout?
No, I don't. I don't ever think about that. It's a decision for me that, I love playing the game of football, and I have since I've been real young. So, I knew that I wouldn't enjoy it as much if I was playing baseball, and haven't regretted it. Happy with my decision. I never catch myself thinking about what it would be like.
What do you think about, you talk about when you were growing up, of course, you were a high-profile guy when you were a Washington Husky. In fact, you got a lot of Heisman buzz there. As much as you can sort of put yourself in his shoes, what do you make of all the Johnny Manziel noise that we're hearing? I guess we have been hearing pretty much since he won the Heisman.
I think it's tough, the expectations that are put on college athletes now, and it starts in high school. There's kids that are coming out of high school that are 16, 17 years old, and they're expected not to make mistakes. And not saying that you should go out and do all the wrong things, but everybody should have the opportunity to live and learn. And I think that it's unfortunate sometimes the scrutiny these kids are under, because they're not allowed to grow up. They're not allowed to make mistakes. They're not allowed to be teenagers and be college students and like everybody else is, So I think that on some level, you have to understand the responsibility you hold with the gifts you've been given. But also, Johnny is human just like anybody else is. He's going to make mistakes, and just like we all do. And so I think that having the same grace that you have with others, with athletes, I think is important, and sometimes I don't think that's the case.
What would you say to him if you had 5 minutes with him and say, listen, I've sort of been down the same path as you, Johnny. Here's what I've learned a few years removed from it.
Oh, I had nothing like he had. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I was I mean, everybody knows who he is. So, you know, it's a different situation, I think, for him a little bit. You know, just what I said, I think, you know, you got to just learn from the life lessons and experiences that you've had, good or bad. And so you take what it from, take from it what you can to improve yourself as a person and understand that you do have the opportunity to grow up and live and learn just like everybody else is, no matter, you know, all the noise that's surrounding you. Just, you know, don't worry about that and focus on the things that you can control.
All right, let's talk about you and the Titans this year. A lot of people talking about the phrase I keep hearing applied to you and to Andy Dalton and a couple other guys is make or break. 2013, make or break. You have Kendall Wright from last year, Justin Hunter. Now you had Delanie Walker to go along with Kenny Britt, Chris Johnson. The offensive line has been enhanced a bit from last year. What does this mean to you? Does this feel? Do you hear that talk about make or break? Does that affect you in any way on a daily basis as you go through training camp, getting ready for September?
No, I think that if you let that stuff affect you, you're just clouding your mind and you're going to slow yourself down and in my opinion, you got to go out and expect to play well. Expect to be successful. Do everything you can in preparation to put yourself in the situation to have success, and then go out and play as hard as you can. And at that point, that's all you can do, and let the chips fall where they may. And I think that majority of the time, if you're willing to work hard enough, you can set yourself up for success.
Well, listen, the defense obviously will have an impact on whether or not you guys get to the postseason. But do you sit around at all when you're looking at film, when you're in the sitting with the other QBs and the position coach? Do you look around and say, "Man, oh man, we're all of a sudden surrounded by a ton of skill on our side of the ball"?
Yeah, we're talented, no doubt. There's guys on the edge that. You get the ball in their hands, it's you don't know what's going to happen. It could be 6 points every time they touch it. So, you know, that's exciting. That's whenever you're surrounded by guys like that, it makes your job easier because you just got to find ways to get the ball in their hands. And it doesn't always have to be flashy or, real explosive. They can take, 5-yard completions and turn them into 50-yard catches. So that's what's exciting about it.
Yeah, and we know a lot of the big names, guys like Kenny Britt, Chris Johnson, obviously. Who's somebody who's going to step up and surprise us this year?
I think Kendall Wright's been, had a great year last year and is a really explosive player, has had that game experience now for a year and is a guy that will make a big impact for us. And, I think Nate Washington has had a great camp as well, done some special things that receiver group, brought a lot of leadership to that receiver group and excited about what he's going to do as well.
Boy, playmakers all over the place. Are we going to see Jake Locker, though, with Chris Johnson standing behind him? I can't think of a better duo to run a little pistol this year.
It's something that I think, we'll look at a little bit and see how we like it, how comfortable we are with it. Got a few more weeks to kind of play around with it and see what we feel of it.
All right, just a couple more things for you, Jake. And have you – you guys got the Bengals coming up here and Andy Dalton and all the storylines going down. Have you gotten a chance? Are you and the fellas sitting around looking at Hard Knocks at all this year?
No, there's a few guys that have a chance to watch it that have enjoy watching it, like to watch it. I never really got into it. So I haven't seen any episodes yet. You hear about it from time to time, but haven't personally watched one yet.
What is it you like to watch? Breaking Bad? Is that your? Is that more your thing?
No, I'm like a Discovery Channel, History Channel kind of guy. I like, I like Shark Week was, once we got back to the hotel at night and we were done, I was watching Discovery Channel Shark Week.
How about Sharknado?
No, I haven't seen that. I've heard a lot about it. Haven't seen it.
That was a crazy documentary, man. It'll scare you.
It was true to life, right?
Yeah, it really was. Well, yeah, I mean, it says it all. There's sharks in a tornado. It was terrifying. That's for sure. All right. Now, no more jive talk, Jake Locker. It's time. I don't like doing it, but it's part of my job. We do it here when we talk with the fellas. We do the uncomfortable question of the day. And, Jake, I'm going to ask it to you right now. In your draft class, Andy Dalton, Colin Kaepernick, Christian Ponder, all drafted behind you. They've all made playoff appearances. Jake Locker, How say you on that one? And how is Jake Locker going to change that in 2013?
I think you've touched on it. You know, we have a good group of guys here. I think went out and got some pieces in free agency through the draft. And more than anything, I think just the atmosphere that we've had this year, guys coming together on each side of the ball and as a team as a whole, it's been a different feel. And I think that being, you know, really trusting each other, believing in each other, is going to go a long ways for us this year, and I think that's why we'll make the playoffs.
All right, last thing for you. You're a Pac-10 guy now living in SEC country, or Pac-12, I should say. Are we ever going to get this Pac-12 back to where it was so it can rival the SEC? I've had it with all the Alabama and LSU noise. I want the Huskies to get good again. I want UCLA to keep going and so on.
I know. I'm rooting for the same thing. I think that it is. I think there's some teams that have the opportunity. You know, I think Oregon's kind of been up there. They've been in the discussion the last couple of years. And I think there's, like you said, UCLA's kind of on the rise again. You know, USC's always in the talk. I think our program's getting a lot better and is getting close at Washington. And I'm really excited about this season to see what they're capable of doing. You know, I just like to think that the Pac-12 is so competitive that nobody ever comes out of there with a good enough record to make it into the national championship game. That's why that's why they don't get the opportunity to play in it, because it's just so competitive week in and week out.
Yeah, I feel that. But you also had a chance to watch Chip Kelly's offense when you were there at Washington. He was at Oregon. What do you think Chip Kelly's going to bring to the NFL?
I don't know. I'm interested to see how he's going to translate that into the pro game. I don't think that he'll do as much with your quarterback, just because I don't think he'll want him to get hit that much. Mm-hmm. But I think the up-tempo, you'll see them push the tempo, push the pace of the game. I think that will be similar, but, you know, the style of plays that they run might be a little different.
Okay, yeah, now we'll let you go with this, and Jake, one last question. What's better for the Titans in 2013, 25 touchdown passes for Jake Locker or 2,000 yards rushing for CJ2K?
A playoff appearance, neither.
That's the right answer, and that's already in the books because I just told you at the top you're making it. Congratulations on that again. Jake, we look forward to watching you this year. I'm going to pick you in fantasy. That's how much I believe in you this year. I really appreciate it. I want Jake on my fantasy team, and I'd like him to make the playoffs this year. Go get him this year, fella.
All right. Thanks a lot. It was good talking to you guys.
Yeah, great talking to you, man. Nice fella. All right.
Really enjoy him.
Well, all right. Now that brings us back here. Well, before we get back to the preseason, real quick, put your fingers in your ears. I mentioned Breaking Bad to Locker, who doesn't watch it either. Black Tie, though, what a first episode that was.
Great stuff.
Oh, my goodness. What storytelling. To pick it up from the exact point that last season leaves off with Hank, the brother-in-law, on the can reading the book from the exact second, but in the first 5 or 10 minutes that precede that, before they go to that point, they jump ahead another year and make us scratch our head about what's going on. And it really
get a little sneak peek.
Oh, dynamite. Dynamite
stuff.
And
the way the episode ends, too, it's rewatchable. You can go back and just watch that last scene a couple of times.
Tread lightly.
Oh, man.
You feel like it. You always feel like Walter White's down and, wow, this is going to be too much. Finally, he's in trouble. But then he tells Hank.
Tread lightly.
A threat. What do you think happens? Everybody's asking the question right now. By the way, let me just say this as a side note. I don't understand this. And, Rank, I'm curious what your thoughts are on this. I have a hypothesis. I have a hunch about where you're going to come down on this. Most people are they like to play the game of when there's a TV show going on, or if there's a serial movie, if there's a movie trilogy and you're in between. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves to try and guess what's going to happen. I don't like that at all.
Me neither.
I'm somebody who's written stuff and everything, and so people, oh, well, aren't you? Don't you like to try to figure out? No, I don't. I want to not think about it at all. I want to enjoy it, and when it starts, I want to see what they came up with. Why do I want to see if I can come up with an ending or guess the way it's going to happen? People have such pride in I knew it! I knew The Sixth Sense was going to end with I knew Bruce Willis was dead. I'm so happy I solved that because I'd heard it was a big mystery what it was. I I don't want to. I want it to wash over me. I want to absorb it and see what story they're telling.
Yeah, but I, first of all, not a lot of people knew that Bruce Willis was dead. I was one of the few who figured it out.
And that's congratulations. I like when everybody puts themselves in that camp.
I can't help it. I mean, I'm too observant to not notice these things. I wish it was something. I wish I was more simple minded to where I could just go in and enjoy it.
Me simple minded.
I didn't call you simple minded. But what I'm saying is, I wish I could have the singular focus, but I just can't turn it off. I can't watch Fight Club. Spoiler alert. Tyler Durden and the other guy from American History X are the same guy. Like, that was obvious 5 minutes into the picture when he walks by.
It wasn't to me. But then again, I'm not. I use it. I am a passive viewer.
Right.
I'm not. That's the point of me watching TV. It's not to try and the TV. I guess on some level, it's a one-sided relationship. I just take. I give nothing back to TV. And you know what? That's why I love TV. He never asks for me to give anything.
Well, some people are like that.
He just tells me stuff. He entertains me. He makes me laugh. Damashek, his best friend is his TV set. Yeah, there you go. There you go, Black Tie.
It's a curse. I wish I could turn it off.
Who is going to die in Breaking Bad? I mean, well, I guess we don't know. Somebody has to die. But I guess that jump ahead by a year, we now know that Walter White isn't dead towards the end of the year, right? I guess it doesn't mean he still can't die because he has that big machine gun in his trunk and everything. What's going to be?
Like you said, I don't like predicting, but I mean, I think Jesse probably at some point leaves the show.
You think Jesse? You know what I think's going to be? I don't know how else this ends. I don't like thinking about it, but I think it has to be that Jesse is going to kill Walter White. That's the way it has to be.
Is Jesse the kid that's with him?
Yeah.
His form? Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
I think that's the way it's... How can you... I mean, you can't...
I've seen the first six episodes.
That's not enough for you to have a valid opinion on it, Rank.
Well, I could tell the way they were setting it up, that scene where the guy, where the drug dealer...
Too far
is in, is in the basement.
That guy, yeah.
Yeah, that guy, and then Walter White was going to let him go, but then realizes, like, oh, he was about to kill me. I think Walter White will eventually... plan to kill Jesse. Jesse will find out and then have to kill him, just like that. Right. Scene
I don't know why I'm indulging your opinion because it's so. That feels like about 15 years ago to me. I remember when you brought. Oh yeah, they had the guy chained up in the basement. That feels so long ago to me.
I just think that's the easy way out for Walter White. The fact that he dies at the hands of Jesse is too predictable. I think honestly, the way to make Walter White, this evil person that he's become, suffer is to actually have him stay alive, but he loses everything else. Like, so he's alive, maybe even Jesse dies, he loses his family, he loses, because that's what he cared about so much, his family, his kids. I feel like he stays alive, but he loses all his money, and he's just alone.
Well, that's interesting. You know, people hated the end of The Sopranos. I kind of liked it because the easy way out would be to just have killed Tony Soprano, to just, you know, have a guy walk in and shoot him, and have us see that. But I feel like it was the psychological torment, that the way they kept doing those jumping around the diner, and it was from Tony's point of view, you'll recall, that everything is where what his eyeballs are seeing in there. And that's his personal hell, is for the rest of his life. He just is always going to have to be hyper lucid. What's going on? Somebody's going to shoot me wherever I am. And that is a form of torture.
Ultimately, Walter White is a classic comic book villain. I got this from one of our co-workers, James Wright, and he breaks down how his name is alliteration. He has his henchmen. He has his alter ego. He's basically like the classic comic book villain. And most comic book villains are great. They never actually die. They just suffer, like, in jail or, like you said, just, you know, that personal hell or prison or whatever.
All right, Rank, let's get back to this preseason here and some of the lessons that people think they've learned. Are these lessons that have merit, or are they, like I say, illusions that we will look back on, say, October 1st and laugh? Hey, remember in August when that guy was never playing and we thought he was going to be a non-factor? How silly of us. Right. Here's my first question. Based on what we've seen with the injuries to the two teams, everybody, I would say, in the spring of 2013, it was all the Niners and Seahawks. One of those two teams is at worst going to the Super Bowl. And which one's it going to be? It seemed like they were in a race with each other in terms of, oh, you added that receiver, we're adding this DB, and back and forth they went. Who, though, because there have been some significant losses from suspension, injury, and so on, who do you think is more liable to somehow find their way out of the playoff picture?
Out of those two teams.
Is it possible that either one of them doesn't make the playoffs?
Absolutely.
You think so? And
the
who
Seahawks.
Is it? Seahawks could fall back.
Pete Carroll. I've seen enough of USC not living up to its potential to realize Pete Carroll can burst onto the scene very quickly, get his team there, looked really good. Last year should have been the year they went to the Super Bowl, because now they'll take a step back this year. It's Pete Carroll's way, and the 49ers will continue to strive. Jim Harbaugh is an amazing coach, going all the way back to when he coached the University of San Diego. And then he went on and coached Stanford. He didn't stop at power places. He didn't have the benefit of recruiting to a USC. He had to build from the ground up, basically. And he took over that team in San Francisco with Alex Smith, who wasn't an elite quarterback. Made him look very good. Now he's got Colin Kaepernick, a full year with Colin Kaepernick. I don't care that Michael Crabtree's not there. Nobody's stopping the 49ers.
Boy, that is a great...
I love that
analysis. You should write that up for the... because you can go on NFL.com. They now... well, I guess we... 365. It's all... There's a podcast now. It's all college football and as it relates to the NFL to some degree and the draft and everything else. That's a great head-to-head. There's the two Pac-12 head coaches and which one's better. And you're probably... I didn't consider that. Well, Jim Harbaugh's on some roll. I mean, since he got to the NFL, he is a knee fumble away in the title game, away from getting to the Super Bowl, and he's one catch away from winning a Super Bowl in two seasons. So, yeah, that's a pretty good-looking resume at this point. And by the way, I agree with you, too. I think, though, that the two things that you would just sort of look at and lean on for whatever questions you might have, Russell Wilson, QBs, typically fall back. I don't know how valid, though, at this point it is to say, to point and say, well, listen, you can't. I agree with history as an indicator of what's going to happen going forward. I believe in that. But I think that the sample size is too small for rookie QBs who have success going into their sophomore season to say, well, every QB slumps in their second season. They all slump in their sophomore year. Like, how many are you looking at? I mean, what's the standard here in the last 15 years? Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton. And Cam Newton, by the way, slid back, I mean, for a couple of weeks, and then all the headlines were about, look, he's mopey in the post game, but that doesn't reflect that he was bad.
He was upset that they lost.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, it was so fine. So he didn't comport himself the way the starting QB should. That doesn't suggest that he was bad. You know, in fact, down in Atlanta, they had the Falcons beat. What was that, week 3 or 4, something like that? They should have won that game. That wasn't his fault. Right. He was playing well for the most part. I mean, he wasn't terrific in the first month of the season. But anyway.
Where does Colin Kaepernick fall in? He's not in his second year. I know a lot of people continue to confuse the fact that he's a rookie quarterback. I always say he's a second-year starter. But, I mean, he's only going to get better because this is his first full training camp preseason as the number one starter. Mm-hmm. He was the number two guy. He was taking a backseat to Alex Smith last year. This is his first real opportunity to be the number one starter. He's going to be better this year. And if you looked at his numbers last year, if you project out his 7 games, he would have come close to 4,000 passing yards, figure about 23 passing touchdowns, 800 rushing yards, 8 touchdowns. And you talk about these teams wanting to limit their quarterbacks from running. I never hear that about the San Francisco 49ers. I never hear that they're like, hey, you know what? We need Kaepernick not to run as much, because he's built like a running back. He's built like one of these huge stud receivers or tight ends. It just doesn't seem like they're fearful of him taking too many shots.
Yeah, well, he's Vince Young with a better arm. I mean, that's who he reminds me of. Their gliding style is what that reminds me of. But yeah, it's funny because the things that you traditionally would point to and say, well, those are dependable, so how bad could they fall back? The Seahawks, great offensive line. Marshawn Lynch is going to be able to run behind that. Christian Michael looks good as the rookie out of A&M. And then the defense should be dominant. But a lot of moving parts. And then you wonder, How does Pete Carroll get into the heads of his team? You know, Belichick. So this is a year where that here's you know, everybody should kind of you know, take a look at what the Patriots have done historically when they have red flags around their team. You know, when anybody says, "Wow, see, look, they have their games on videotape." Oh yeah, NFL. Now we're taking out the lead pipe and we're going to teach you a lesson for doubting us. Can Pete Carroll create a similar chip on the shoulder of the Seahawks for like, oh, a lot of questions about PEDs and everything? Can Pete Carroll turn that into a positive for them?
And also remember, the Seahawks won a lot of games last year where they rallied.
Mm-hmm.
The game against the Packers being an immediate one that comes to mind about the fail Mary and everything. They were very fortunate in that game. They got some fortunate wins. They created their own luck against teams like Chicago and whatnot. However, they won a lot of close games, games that could have gone the other way. Things do not break in their favor.
Rams
this season.
Better, Cardinals
Arizona?
Better. How good they're respectively going to be, difficult to say. I do like the Rams quite a bit, and I am debating whether or not they're going to make the postseason or if the Falcons are going to get in there. I'm backing off of the Saints. I think the Saints, I mean, that defense has to be, I mean, it doesn't have to be the Seahawks or 49ers, but it can't be just a bum defense. And when I step away from the Falcons, because I don't like their lack of physicality. That's what lost them the game ultimately, is that they just couldn't pound the ball in the second half when they had the big lead on the Niners. But, you know, keep in mind, I'm talking myself into it, not talking you into it. But the Falcons, they're one pass away. They were down in the red zone. They're a pass away from going to the Super Bowl. And those were the two teams. Everybody loved the Niners. Everybody loved the Seahawks. Yes, the Seahawks could have knocked the Falcons out the week one, but the week prior. But the Falcons, man, I don't know why I'm down on them. I don't know if it's because I'm just cuckoo and I watch a dome team like that and I feel like they're soft. And they don't practically have a ton of defensive playmakers. But that offense is going to score so many points. Does it matter?
Do they have a better defense than the Saints?
Yes, they do.
That's the big difference. I mean,
well, but the difference is then when they play the Seahawks, but the Packers' defense is going to be, I think, is going to be sneaky good. But the Seahawks and the 49ers, look, the Falcons can beat those teams. We've seen it.
And as good as the Falcons' offense was last year, realize that they were very one-dimensional when Michael Turner was in the game. When Michael Turner was in the game, they had to run the football. Steven Jackson is an exceptional receiver out of the backfield. You don't know whether they're going to run or pass when he's back there. That's going to make a huge difference for them. It's going to make all their already great skill players even better. The Falcons and the 49ers, to me, far and away the two best teams.
Boy, oh boy. I think I'm starting to not just say think the Falcons are going to make the playoffs. I really think they might go to the Super Bowl now.
And that's the thing. That's what it comes down to with the Saints. I'd put the Saints at number three. The Saints and the Falcons need to have a defense. They don't have to have a dominant defense. Their offenses are so good, they can win. They just need the proverbial, you know what, can you just slow down a team enough to allow us to get ahead enough to win?
No.
You know what it is? It's the Martin Gramatica getting in the way of that Seahawks guy when Tony Romo fumbles the snap.
Mm-hmm.
And the play. If Martin Gramatica
just
hits it barely, just knocks that guy off his course a little bit, Tony Romo runs that ball into the end zone, touchdown. If those two didn't, so my poor analogy.
Very
being,
true. No, that's a good one. That's keen. I say it a different way. It's sort of the same thing. What teams need in the NFL now is, and Peanut Tillman, it to me is the personification of what NFL defenses need to concentrate on these days. It's about playmakers. The Steelers are like their defense statistically. Wow, it's pretty good. Look at that. The Steelers ranks right up there year after year. And yet, why doesn't that equal success? Their offense isn't a bum offense. So why don't they go deeper? Because they don't make plays. They can hold teams down in terms of yardage. But what it's about now is playmakers on both sides. That's why I think the Chiefs are going to be much better now. I think a team like the Falcon, you know, a guy like Osi, you drop Osi Umenyiora into that defense. If he can make some big plays there, that can make all the difference for them. Speaking of that, next, is it an illusion or do you think that DeAndre Hopkins is now finally going to be the receiver that the Texans have always needed?
I really do. And if you look at a situation, a team you like to talk about a lot, St. Louis, where they brought in Tavon Austin to be the savior of their offense. Like, we need a receiver. We drafted one. Go in there, save our offense, do everything that we need to do because we really need that. The great thing about Hopkins is he doesn't have to do that. He comes into a team that's got a great running back with Arian Foster. They've already got Andre Johnson. As long as he can come in and be the Alvin Harper type of guy, and I know I'm going way back in my analogies here, but if he can be that kind of guy, that's enough. Because that's all they need, because that team is very close.
I'm trying to think of a more current
who would be
number
current?
Two who was good, not great.
The Torrey Holt?
Well, Torrey Holt should go to the Hall of Fame, though. Yeah, he should go to the Hall of Fame.
I don't know why.
That's a perfect one.
I was looking at your best and worst uniforms.
Oh, yeah, that's up there on NFL.com. You can look at the best. We did it. We talked about it on the podcast last week. Best uniform, best jersey for a fan to go out and get. Again, the premise being you can't go out and buy 40 or 50. There's a lot of free agents moving here and there. There are guys who get suspended for nefarious reasons. You can't just buy a bunch of jerseys. I want you to get a jersey that you will stand the test of time, you understand. One that you can wear in 2013 and next year. Ones that will get you pats on the back as you go through the tailgate parties or in the stands or out there with your chums watching the games wherever you watch the games. Everybody wears jerseys now. That's been a big takeaway for me from my youth of going to pro football games versus now. Everybody was a crazy fan when I was a kid. It just wasn't a thing. You know, you could get like two or three jerseys from your team. You know, you couldn't get you certainly couldn't get any guy on the team. They didn't make them when I was a kid. Now you go to a stadium. Everybody wears the team colors. That is just not something that existed. It feels very collegiate.
It's not? Did you wear T-shirts as a kid?
No, it was cold. You know, it was fall. I grew up in the Northeast. It wasn't cold. It was cold outside. You didn't have the stuff. Yeah, you wore the toque with a little ball-y, stringy thing on the top of it.
Okay.
You know, the black and gold one. But, yeah, everybody didn't have head to toe. Now everybody, adults, everybody's dressed in the colors. Anyway. Yes, NFL.com. We talked about it. You helped out. Chris Wessling from around the league, an enormous help with throwing out some ideas on that, too. Anyway, look that up at NFL.com. Rank, well, how do you feel about those Jags uniforms now that you saw them?
When I saw the Dolphins uniforms in Canton, Ohio, I really liked them being down in the field. Thought they were very striking. Watching them on the replay at the eatery afterwards, seeing them on the flat screen in high def didn't have kind of the same effect on me or effect on me. Yeah,
effect.
I had it right. I shouldn't second guess myself.
No.
So I don't know if I'll ever get a chance to see the Jaguars uniforms up close. I do want to see them in person. I liked it on TV. I feel that if I saw it in person, I would really like it.
Let me tell you why they're not good. Here's what they had going for them. They were, first of all, they're stunning to look at, and I don't necessarily mean that in a good way. They had everything going for them because they were playing the Miami Dolphins, whose shade of turquoise is the exact same. So that makes it complimentary and makes it look as good as it's possibly going to look. That uniform's going to look very bad when they're playing a team in red. It's just going to be – it's just all those weird shapes all over the place, different colors on the helmet, everything. Too much. It went too far, Jags. I admire ambition. I like getting the lab and work these things out. But the uniform monitor, my official word, I regret to inform you, is a thumbs down. I don't like them, I'm afraid. All right, real quick, let's just talk one more here, Rank. Illusion, because this is another team that has a lot of range, is getting a big range of opinions from the experts here in August. The Detroit Lions.
I was hoping you were going to go Cleveland.
Well, we could talk about them, too. And listen, we have a couple of weeks yet before we kick off. But the Lions, first of all, they played the Jets last week. And, again, I don't put a ton of stock in individual plays that happen for guys that have played a bunch of games already. But, my goodness, that Mark Sanchez pick was just, what a way to start. I feel like it was probably November-ish last year. I said, can you imagine? Forget about the New York media and how bad the reaction would be if the Jets made it through this offseason with the idea that, yeah, Mark Sanchez is our guy. Mark Sanchez is our quarterback. Forget the fans and the media. The locker room would go crazy. They would never accept something like that. And I know Geno Smith is there, but, hey, Mark Sanchez started the first preseason game for the Jets. That's got to be pretty depressing to the other guys in the locker room. He looked atrocious, but Ziggy Ansah makes the big play there. Mm-hmm. A lot of buzz about Ndamukong Suh looking terrific. Nick Fairley coming on now, they say. They feel like that's going to be. He's taking a turn. I mean, he already was on the upswing here. What a defensive line. I mean, that right. can correct a lot of problems that they have anywhere else on the field.
They still had Cliff Averill, though. I mean, it wasn't like they were lacking in that position.
I mean, it could really be this dynamo. I mean, the first-round draft picks all along the front line there.
It really could be, and it comes down to what we were just talking about with the Saints and the Falcons. Throw the Lions in this mix, too. I put the Lions a little bit further back. There's not going to be three of these teams. There's not going to be these three offense only, we can't play defense type teams get into the playoffs. It's going to be the team that comes out and plays the best defense. I still have a lot of questions about the Lions defense. Yes, that line can be dominant. We have to see it week in, week out. Sue has to step up at some point. I know if you looked at the end of last season, he really had started to play well. He's got to do that for the entire season because a lot of the problems come in their secondary, but those can be corrected if you have that dominant front push up.
You just
look back at the Giants Super Bowl wins.
Of course.
That all hinged on that front four putting on the pressure of those teams. If they can get that kind of pressure, that team can be very dangerous.
What about, and then Reggie Bush? He never stays healthy, but it's not like he is the focal point of the offense. It's not like what Miami asked him to do, which is basically carry the load for that team. I mean, if he's a guy who's the dynamic, again, playmakers, what NFL to me is all about that. And guys like Warren Sapp would be like, oh, it's all about up front. And yes, the Seahawks show and the 49ers show that when you have those strong interiors, that obviously goes a long way. But playmakers. What you need are those dynamic pieces out on the field. And like I said with the Titans, now how can that offense not succeed? How can the Falcons not succeed? You know, all of a sudden now you have Calvin Johnson, you have that rifle-armed Matt Stafford, and now you have Reggie Bush. It feels like, well, that offense should be pretty good, especially considering we don't know how good the Bears defense is going to be. Peanut Tillman, and my point was with playmakers, Peanut Tillman, all he's about, punch that ball loose. That's mm-hmm. all he does is strip the ball. That's what you want out of a defense. It's no longer about shut teams down and, 10 points or less a game. Those things happen very rarely now. It's about the teams that can turn you over. You know, I think that's what you want out of your defense these days. I think that defensive line of Detroit can make those sorts of plays. On the other side, the Lions' offense is going to be pretty dynamic. The Packers have a shaky defense. We don't know what's going to be with the Bears with Urlacher moving out there. We don't know what's going to be there. And then the Vikings, that's another one that we could get into now. We won't do it, but again, we'll continue breaking it down. But the Vikings are another fascinating case for me, and it goes back to where we started this whole conversation, which is how you can't rule out anybody. The Jags, the Raiders, and the Jets. I think, like, that's it. Who's right? There's not a team in the whole NFC. Think about that. In the whole NFC, there's not a team you can say, yeah, that team definitely is not going to the playoffs.
You're absolutely right.
Think about it. Tell me one. I mean, the Cardinals. No, I know I don't no, have to no, tell no. you the Cardinals no. can make the playoffs.
Absolutely. The Cardinals, again, you talk about offensive playmakers. Michael Floyd came on at the end
yes,
of last season.
He
seemed like a little bit of a buzz.
That's absolutely right.
Michael Floyd, Andre Roberts. They got Rashard Mendenhall.
I think Mendenhall with his old guy, Bruce Arians.
And what did he do? He came out immediately, Bruce Arians, the new coach of the Arizona Cardinals, and said, Mendenhall's my guy. He didn't mess around. He didn't talk about Stephon Taylor or any of those guys. He said, this is my guy. Carson Palmer is the quarterback. And they signed, was it Drew Stanton? They signed one, and then they got it. He's been very authoritative. And when you look at all the new coaches, now Mark Trestman, we have a history of success of him in the CFL, but we realize that CFL success does not always translate to NFL success, or else Dieter Brock would have been a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Rank.
But
nicely done,
Bruce Arians is one of the few new coaches who has a pedigree of taking a team – that should not have been a playoff team to the playoffs.
And isn't that a funny thing? And another team we'll get into in greater depth as regular season approaches. You know, what he left behind there, you know, he obviously wasn't nominally the head coach of that team. Chuck Pagano was in Indy last season, and Pagano now back there as the head man for presumably the entire run. That defense looked terrible. That's a great question. Was that defense an illusion? It wasn't good last year. If that defense isn't better, that's your team. How did the Titans get in? Somebody's got to go down.
Right.
And everybody's picking the Colts. I don't like that I'm in the popular opinion right now. A lot of people are saying the Colts are going to slide back. I don't like that. But that defense, I mean, Prague, the defense should really seems pretty crummy.
Yeah.
I don't care what Andrew Luck does. I mean, it might be great on your fantasy team. But, I mean, boy, oh, boy, they're going to have to score a ton of points every week because I think that looks like one of the worst defenses out there. Not based on what I saw this past weekend either. Well, in part. But the question is, though, back to Pagano, Arians, it was kind of Arians' team more than it was Pagano's last year. Is Pagano now a guy who still really, we don't know what he's like as a head coach really over the course of a season. This will be an interesting statement that 2013 makes on him. Make or break.
I couldn't agree more. That's why I'm ready for week two of the preseason. Let's
nicely done, now. Rank. NFL preseason live. Go to NFL.com/Sheck, S-H-E-K. We appreciate you if you go through the link we have up there because we get some credit in some way. We get money for that, right, Rank?
I think personal checks.
Do we?
From the commissioner himself.
Don't mean to burst your bubble, but no, we don't.
It's
get
$19.99
money.
Per subscription,
what?
So we get like what do we get? Like $50 a piece for
it's
that?
It's not about you guys; it's about the fans, guys.
Are you getting a piece of this action, Black Tie?
We get promotion. There it is. We get more podcasts, more episodes, more DDFP. So hashtag DDFP, by the way. So it's all about the fans, not about you two guys.
Hashtag fire Black Tie as well.
By the way,
whatever it takes, guys.
I was thinking the umpires are in baseball back in the news, you know, for being too involved in the game or being too prominent.
You Darvish, right?
Yeah, the umpire. And, you know, I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. What kind of human being wants to be an umpire? Who wants that? Does anybody grow up and think, you know what, you know, be a cool thing is I'd like that. No, I don't want to play. I just want to tell other people, they did well or they did poorly there. Yeah, mm-hmm. I want to rule things. I want to judge. You know, I guess it'd be cool to be a judge, like sitting up there with the gavel and the gown, and you know, dispensing justice.
Of course.
But while that would be cool, there I don't see anything cool about dispensing justice in sport.
Yeah. Did you? I don't know if this
Who
happened.
Who wants
to you,
that?
Like when you played intramurals in college. If you were playing basketball, for instance, you had to referee a game like somebody from your team. Every time they chose me to referee, I would go to the guys. If they're playing 5-on-5 or 3-on-3, I'd be like, call your own fouls. I'll settle any disputes if it gets heated, but call your own fouls like we're playing pickup.
Yes.
Don't get me involved.
It's very strange. Very strange. All right. Well, listen, big series coming up for the Pittsburgh Pirates in St. Louis. 1 out of 3 would be great by my book. That reminds me to mention on Grantland, our pal Jonah Carey is back doing his podcast there, his baseball-centric podcast. I joined him. Follow me at Damashek, and you'll see the link for that podcast. I was on there with John Heyman. He's a respected baseball man. I am a disrespected football man. So
perfect.
I went on there and talked to Pirates baseball.
Did you guys say that if the Dodgers don't win the World Series, it'll be a disappointment?
I did, essentially. I talked about them and everything else, and he said, would you trade a World Series title this year for 20 more years of losing seasons? And I said, absolutely. Because we're not the Halos, Dodgers, Yankees, or any of these teams that can buy championships. Our standard is much lower.
Well, the
One every
can.
Two decades, that'd be fine. But yes, no, your Angels cannot. Yeah, they're too busy talking about Jack Clark and what he thinks about that. All right, see, we could do a whole nother thing. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we should do a blacklist, and we'll get Rank the Halos wonk in here. We'll get his thoughts on Albert Pujols and that deal. All right, listen.
Here, I'll take 5 minutes right here. And what? Oh, Black Tie giving me the evil eye.
I think there's much else to do here, but call it a day.
Thank you, Don Draper. All right, thanks to Jake Locker. Good fun yapping with him. And thanks to you. We'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce later on. But in the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.